from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the good.
It's a little book of atheist spiritualities by a guy by the name of André Comte Sponville, which is, you know, kind of...
Did you pronounce that right, or did you screw that up too?
I believe it's Comte Sponville, because there's no accent on the E. I don't know why it's abbreviated. I assume maybe he took his wife's name. You know, that's been an increasing trend as of late? You know, men who take their wives' names?
I just thought, are you sure it's actually like that? Or like they just take their wife's name, or they do the abbreviation thing?
Well, some take the wife's name, some take the abbreviation. I just think it's kind of like, you know, neat.
I always found it stupid that you create these ridiculously long names, and we have it all.
No, I don't mean the hyphens. I think the hyphens are stupid.
Yeah, hyphens are stupid.
But I'm like, if you married someone and they had a cool last name, would you take it?
Yeah, for sure.
How cool would it have to be? Like what if like her last name had to be like Danger or something like that?
Yeah, something like
Ryan
that.
Ryan Danger. You want to be called Ryan Danger?
You got to understand that parents are very off about this. They want to keep the bloodline going the way that they want to do it. You know, I think my parents would, my dad would cry if I gave up the Harkness name.
I know my dad would would be pretty upset because the only other Forte kid, I think he might be gay. So he's like, you're the only one left.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as though it's the name that's important. It's just the genes, and the genes don't carry my name. So I don't see that. If I marry somebody that has the last name of power, I will change my name.
This comes from a time when people didn't even understand the concept of genes.
I know. It's a remnant from that. Anyways, we're getting off topic. The other thing we're going to be talking about is something that everybody's been messaging me about. So I'll take that as a clue that we have to talk about it. It's... The bus campaign in England that's underway for the atheist slogan. I don't know if you know much about this, but we'll get to it in a little bit. Okay, I want to actually just talk a little bit about the book. Now, Ryan hasn't read it at all because I won't allow it in the toilet.
Actually, I read the first, like, two chapters before Jake finally took it and started reading it. And from there, it was a very slow crawl for him to actually get through it and read it.
Okay, well, I'll admit there's a few reasons for that. Number one, the book is not that easy. When he starts dealing with a lot of the philosophical arguments, either defending or disproving God, it can get a little bit, heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something it's not necessarily a bad thing because it forces you to really think about it. And you read two, three pages and you got to, stop reading and just really think about it. Otherwise, you're just... You know, it's just going to wash right over you, and it's not going to make much of an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to just give the general impression that I have of this book is I do think that it's a book that people should read. And the reason is because it's not like most of the other atheist books that that are out there. I mean, most of the other atheist books deal with two things. Number one, they'll try to scientifically disprove religion, which is a popular one. And number two, they'll talk about sort of religion in one of these, okay, look at all the violence that's caused by it, this is what happens to the people who are faithful, so on and so forth. But he doesn't talk about that at all. Mm-hmm. At all. He doesn't mention science, he doesn't mention what faith makes people do, because I think he's of the opinion that generally even people that don't believe in God are just as guilty as many atrocities as people that are.
Well, that's not a bad way to go about it, because I've always been if a person defines himself as an atheist by the fact that they don't like religion, I'd say that they're less atheist and more anti-religion.
Anti-theist, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, and I think that's a really big problem is that most people don't really go, you have a hard time getting people off the fence of moderate religiousness. And then even when they get off the fence, they're often not really atheists. They just hate religion, and it's like that's no good for anybody.
Yeah, it's not exactly constructive. It can be amusing, like Christopher Hitchens is amusing as an anti-theist.
Mm-hmm.
His acerbic writing is entertaining, but in terms of its impact, it's not really that good.
Yeah, and hey, we're guilty of it too. I mean, most of the stuff that we talk about how dumb religion is all the time. So we're guilty about it too. But it's definitely good to hear that somebody's actually speaking out about the idea of the spirituality behind atheism, or at least going a bit deeper than just the atheism is about God doesn't exist.
Right. I mean, I think at one point, because you have to remember in France, like the majority of the population there are atheists. So he didn't exactly feel as though he needed to disprove God in a scientific way. I think everybody kind of agrees in France, saying, like, yeah, there's no real scientific basis for it. So why would you try to disprove God
with
science?
It's a pretty stupid argument to get yourself embroiled with. Because, I mean, there's no way you can win somebody who's... Win an argument against somebody whose general argument is everything that happens happens because God made it like that. How are you supposed to get over that ridiculous... It's like somebody saying no times infinity plus one. You just can't beat that. You're like, well, yeah.
It's like infinity plus one is still infinity, doofus.
Yeah, but it's still better than if you said infinity. Infinity plus infinity. And we could go on and on. And again, that's the exact... And that's pretty much what it comes down to, is you can't argue with these people.
Actually, speaking of infinity, there are some things that he talks about in the book that have to do with some of our concepts of infinity. Like... I get the impression that our friend has done a bit of drugs. And the reason is because he talks about how we define something like infinity. He says, you know, we weren't really meant to understand these kinds of concepts. We're on the edge of infinity. We can understand it conceptually, but we can't visualize it. And ultimately, that's kind of where anytime we make any pronunciations about it, say we... He talks about the ontological argument. Now, if you don't know what that is, it's basically the argument that, well, I have an idea of a perfect being, and existence is part of that, of the requirements of perfection, and therefore a perfect being is God, and therefore God exists. That's the ontological argument, right? Mm-hmm. But he says that the problem with that is that we may be familiar with the concept, we may be able to conceptualize it, but we can't really understand it. And really, does... existence, is that a necessary part of perfection? I mean, and does even something that's completely perfect exist simply because you have, like, a, you know, an image of it in your head? Sounds kind of stupid. And it would be like, here's another example. Say I imagine the perfect meal, the perfect dessert, okay? Well, just because I do doesn't mean it exists. You know, it's not going to suddenly manifest itself because I thought of it. It doesn't mean that just merely because a concept of something that is perfectly delicious doesn't mean it exists, right?
So what is the point of this in the sphere of atheism?
Well, basically, he does a good job of laying out the philosophical arguments rather than the scientific ones. Like, he basically runs through all of the philosophical arguments, and he's a philosopher by trade.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't know what you trade for that. I suppose just sell books.
Yeah, it's like
kind of hard to make a living on
that. All those philosophy majors that go out from university to God knows what. I don't know, manager of Starbucks.
When you're pouring coffee, you get to think about the universe.
Yep.
Anyway, so he basically takes it from the philosopher kind of point of view. So he basically boils down every single religious argument and cuts it apart. And that's actually one of the reasons why this book is worth reading. It really is kind of interesting to see that because, you know, I've read, I don't know, probably every major book on atheism, and it hasn't gone this deep. They've talked about the issues.
Mm-hmm.
Dawkins talks about it in The God Delusion, like most of the arguments, but he doesn't really try to defend it philosophically. He just tries to defend it scientifically, which I find are mixing two genres which don't always mix very well. They don't blend well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to see how you can have a philosophy that doesn't involve God at all. Now, the other thing that I thought that he did really well is he kind of describes what the world would be like without religion. Like, do we need it or do we not need it? I mean, he takes the position that he doesn't really care if people believe. You know, he just doesn't care. As long as those beliefs just don't affect anybody else, he's cool with it.
There's no war cry, no rally throughout the book. Because this is another issue I have with a lot of the books. Is a lot of the books seem to... I mean, they do have that agenda where it basically says, you know, we've got to go to war against the religious. And I've always been like, you know, I know that we have to go to war against a lot of the crap that is being spewed and some of the issues that are being brought up, you know, gay rights in California and across America, stuff like that. But on the other hand, I'm not exactly sure that I completely subscribe to the idea that the annihilation of religion is something that you know, as far as the atheist army goes, I don't think we're ready to go up against that yet.
Well, you know,
and
it's
I think
just...
it's stupid and premature to actually try and jump to that level at this moment.
Oh, it would be a pretty bad idea. I mean, but here's the thing. I can understand why all those other authors do it. I mean, we were watching that video about, you know, that California, the law that they're about to vote to repeal
Proposition 8.
And you watch the tactics of these guys, and they are cold, man. They are just fucking organized. Mm-hmm. And, you know, atheists don't even come close to that shit. Not even close. And you look at the tactics that these guys are using, and, I mean, it could be the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we don't know how far some of these guys will go to, you know, reclaim the world in the name of Jesus. You have to think that although, you know, you don't want to answer that battle cry, it may come to that point. It's just that we don't want to inflame things so that it does.
Well, the interesting thing about Proposition 8, did you know that about 70% of all the funding for Proposition 8, for the Yes on Prop 8, has come from the Mormon Church?
Really?
Yeah. They are the backers behind it. They are the masterminds behind it. They are pushing it. They are jamming it down. Like, this all came up before, and California rightly voted it down. And then the Mormon Church came in, and they basically are forcing it back in again, and they're hiding it under all this legalese bullshit so that people don't even understand. Like, if you read Proposition 8, you wouldn't even know what the hell it meant. Because it's written so poorly as to confuse and befuddle.
It's convoluted.
It's completely convoluted, and that's for a purpose. And you know what? Your shit is evil when you have to hide it behind legalese. I've always said this. If you got to hide something behind legalese because you don't want people to know what you're doing, then immediately, that's evil. It is just evil.
If the test of evil is just, how confusing is it?
I just think, well, it's just immoral. I'm just amazed that it's not a big story. I picked it up because I read Andrew Sullivan, who's actually, a homosexual conservative with AIDS in America from the UK.
He's also about to be kicked out of the United States, isn't he? Because he has AIDS, right?
Actually, they're changing up the laws on that. They've just announced that they won't be deporting people, or they'll be renewing green cards and visas and stuff like that for people with AIDS, because obviously to not do that would again be evil.
Well, I guess maybe Andrew Sullivan could be credited for a lot of that, eh?
Anyways, I know we're kind of going off on a tangent, but I just wanted to put that in there about the Mormon Church. If you look up, just go to Google and type in the Mormons and Proposition 8, you're going to find out everything about it, and it's really crazy. Not just the fact that it is a religious organ. I mean, obviously we knew that it was religion that and the religious organizations that were behind Proposition 8, but it's just interesting that it is a specific group that has decided to make it their mandate, and it's not even people from freaking California. It just blows me away.
Well, you know what's funny? The video that we were watching was some obvious Christians, Protestants that were saying, like, we need to go over and we need to pray for these guys and vote for that and blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. But they fucking hate Mormons. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, and you know that it's like that in the, you know, in the Mormon agenda. They think to themselves, we don't care who we have to ally ourselves with so long as gay people aren't allowed to marry. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine that the more religion gets marginalized, right, mm-hmm. put out of political decisions,
yeah.
then the more that they're likely to kind of band together. And that's what I'm talking about. You know, where I don't want to have a battle cry here, but shit like that really does scare me because mm-hmm. they are organized and they are desperate. They are fucking desperate. They're so desperate that they would be willing to ignore the fact that, you know, the Mormons are always fucking with Christian shit.
Here's the deal. I don't think that, I don't want to minimize the amount of worry that we have over what you know certain religious agendas are, but I was telling you when we watched that video, which is on the site, you can go check it out. What did you label the post at, just so people can go check it out?
It's just labeled as you got to watch this.
Yeah, okay. Check it out and watch the video. And what you got to realize, as I was saying this before, is 35 years from now, people are going to look back at that video, and it's going to be like there was a video put up. Where people were like, you gotta come out and we're gonna take these fire hoses and we're gonna spray the shit out of these black people. And it's gonna be
awesome. We're gonna reclaim the soul of America.
Yeah, and that is exactly what it's gonna be like, because people are gonna look at it and go, how in anyone's name, let alone God's, was this kind of intolerance peddled, and it's going to be like that at least for the gay thing. It's going to be a bit harder as far as stuff like abortion and even the stuff like stem cell research.
The one thing you're not seeing is that you think, well, we're going to look at this in 20 years from now and think, mm-hmm. how could we think this way? But the one thing that you forget, if you were to compare, say, lynching or the hatred that was associated with it, with this, you know, this campaign to undo gay marriage, there's one very, very distinct difference.
What's that?
It's how it's sold. Mm-hmm. And it's sold so cleverly that you can't tell immediately what, or just how evil that shit is. You just can't. It's that same thing that I was talking about, where now racism, bigotry, homophobia, all of that is being masked. It's being masked and being given another word. It's like doublespeak, mm-hmm. right? Rather than saying, we don't want gays to marriage, or like, we want to save the soul of America.
The sanctity of marriage.
We're
not taking away anybody's right to do anything. We're just defining marriage as not including gays.
It's doublespeak.
It really is Orwellian. It really is.
It is 100% Orwellian. Okay. Let's go back.
Go back. We're going to rewind to the part where we're talking about the book doesn't have anything saying that there doesn't need to be a war.
Right. Well, where we just discussed the fact that perhaps there doesn't.
I'm still of the opinion that...
All right. No, I agree. I said I don't want to... I haven't made a call to arms as of yet. I don't think that's necessary. But I'm very careful about watching these trends. And I have to admit that I don't like where these trends are going. So if anybody asks me, hey, why do you still maintain the good atheist? Why do you still want to write that book? This is exactly the reason. It's because things aren't improving. Mm. They're getting scarier because, you know, that one thing that every other... And even this guy misses it completely because he says, I don't really care if people have faith. They can have as much faith as they want. I really don't care. But... when you're not allowed to question other people's faith, this is the kind of shit that happens. Because if I was to call these bigot assholes in making that commercial for California, mm-hmm. Then they would just be like, well, you know, you can't question me. That's my faith. Mm-hmm. And they could hide their bigotry behind that. And that's what people do. Mm-hmm. But this is just a more blatant example of it. Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing I do want to say about the book, this is probably the more negative comment that I have about the book, is the fact that he wants to really deal with atheist spirituality. He tries to deconstruct, Christian spirituality or just religious spirituality. And, you know, he says something that's really interesting. He says that, for instance, two of the tenets of religion, faith and hope, are something that eventually will no longer exist. What do I mean by that? Well, let's pretend the rapture happened tomorrow. Mm-hmm. One, you wouldn't need any more faith because God's existence would be proven to you. Yeah. So faith would disappear. Mm-hmm. And two, you wouldn't need hope because you're now in heaven. Mm-hmm. So there's no need for hope in heaven. Mm-hmm. In a sense, the goal of religion is to have no more faith and no more hope. But at the same time, what's weird is that they require it more and more and more because everything around them seems to be pointing away from God. So they need more faith. They need more hope. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it should be things that, you know, in a religion that eventually fade. So it's kind of like the irony of religion, mm-hmm. if you think about it.
Yeah. So wait a minute. You're saying this is a negative thing?
Well, hold on.
That was a pretty cool... You could pull that quote out at like a little dinner party, and you'll blow people's minds.
No, that part's cool. The part that isn't cool is because that's the deconstructing part, which is cool.
He doesn't say anything about having sex with, like, preteens or something.
No. Okay. No, he doesn't. But the point where he loses me, and I think he loses most of the audience, is his interpretation of spirituality. Mm-hmm. Because I have to admit that I didn't share it. I didn't share his vision of what spirituality is. When he talks about his concept of love, his concept of infinity, and all these other concepts, I found it a little bit wishy-washy, I won't deny you. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm a materialist at heart, mm-hmm. right? I have a very practical outlook on most of these feelings.
You're practically a freaking robot, man.
I am not a robot.
You are relatively
Shut
a robot.
Shut your mouth.
Well, you know what? Let's have a good atheist devoted to love sometime, and we'll see.
I'm going to talk to you about love. I have some very interesting ideas.
We'll see who sounds more like a Turing machine.
My point is basically this, that I think that in trying to give an example of atheist spirituality, I think that's where he loses everybody. Mm-hmm. Because... I think that inherently spirituality is a personal thing. Why is the cat meowing? He's annoying me.
He wants some love.
Yeah, he wants that mechanistic love. Anyways, the point that I'm trying to make is just basically that when you're trying to tell people there atheist spirituality can exist, although it's nice to have an example of one. Mm-hmm. I just really don't find that most atheists are going to find that it's
that there's
anything close to their own spirituality. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or their own feelings of interconnectedness with things. I mean, it happens all the time. And when people can have experiences where their minds are expanded and blown and they feel joy, they feel sadness, they feel as though they're part of the universe. But again, that's just a feeling. It doesn't necessarily represent reality. Mm-hmm. And you can't go around selling it as that reality. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's an admirable effort. I think it is definitely worth reading because I think some people will actually like his spirituality, and I think it's definitely worth it. And it's spirituality that doesn't require any religious context.
But I'm sure it was put forward. Wasn't it just put forward as an example of his opinion of his atheist spirituality?
Well, it's difficult to tell at one point because the part about it is so long.
Well, it is called the Little Book of Atheist.
I know, and I
spirituality.
Really
spirituality,
and I think that is ultimately where it fails.
Isn't that ironic?
Right. It's a good book, but I think it fails in its efforts to make an atheist spirituality because I don't think that most atheists need the type of spirituality that he's talking about. Mm-hmm. I think that most of them, you know, like, remember that episode that I did, the Alone, the sort of like the special episode?
Well, since you did it alone, no.
I guess you never really listened to it. Anyways, that was one of the ones, that was one of the episodes that I got the most response about because I was talking about my own, you know, I guess what you could describe as spiritual experience. And a lot of people identified with that. But it wasn't an experience where I glorified it in any sort of sense. And I described the spiritual aspect of it as just me coming to terms with, you know, some of the very fundamental aspects of myself, like the deep goals that I had and the fact that, you know, maybe I had forgotten them. But when I got, you know, when I felt as though I was achieving those, that the kind of joy that I felt could be described by some as spiritual, but it, again, like I said, I mean, it was based on, you know, very concrete things. It was based in the material world. My feelings were, you know, still, I could describe them. They wouldn't be like, they're not so immense that they're impossible to fucking describe. Mm. But that's my point. Like, it's just, I didn't try to overwhelm anybody with that story. It was just my example. But I feel as though him, like any philosopher, like any teacher, rather than just tell you about it from his perspective, he's just trying to sell it to you. Mm-hmm. Like saying, and that's the whole point of writing a book, to sell an atheist spirituality. And I just don't think that that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So that's basically my review of the book. Do you want to move on, or is there anything else you want to say?
No. I say that since it was sent to The Good Atheist, and since I'm 50% part, now that you finished reading the book, I should be allowed to read it in the bathtub and on the toilet. Can I at least read it in the bathtub?
Sure. Yeah, you're just not allowed to poo when you read it. I don't think that's unreasonable.
I just don't understand why that's... you know what? It doesn't even make scientific sense. It really doesn't.
In the bath, you're cleaner. When you're taking a poo, there's fucking shit particles all over the place.
Actually, that's not true. In the bathtub, poo particles from my butt are up all over my boobies.
They're
and my
not
arms.
In the air.
Yeah?
What, are you using your arm to turn pages?
No.
You're using your hands, and they should better be fucking dry. If they're wet, you can't touch it. Are they wet?
No, they're not wet. But they're not wet when I'm taking a poo either. You're just being ridiculous.
No. Actually, it's better when it's in the water because it's dissolved inside the water, so it's not in the air. Come on now.
Dear God, is there one fucking scientist out there listening to this fucking show that can please tell Jacob that sitting on the toilet is cleaner than sitting in a bathroom?
Okay, let me ask you this question. Say you wipe your fucking fat ass, right? And you're holding the book. Are you going to just drop the book, wash your hands, and pick the book back up? Because I have a feeling that you're going to fucking be touching it with your shit hands.
No, I put the book on the back of the toilet, and then I take care of everything else, and then I don't touch the book again until I go back to the throne.
A rule's a rule, dude.
It's just a ridiculous rule.
You know, I don't think it's that ridiculous.
It's 50% your book. I'm 50% of this team, and that's just, yeah.
That's why I agreed with the bath thing. That was 50%. That was a compromise. See how I'm compromising here?
Yeah, okay, we'll see.
All right, the other thing I wanted to talk about, I want to get your opinion on this. Basically, in January, there will be atheist banners, and the banner basically reads, there's probably no God. So just enjoy your day.
One minute, there's going to be atheist banners where?
On buses. On public transportation buses. Basically the slogan... This is in England.
You're terrible setting up the story, but I understand now. Okay, thank you.
The slogan says, there's probably no God, now stop worrying and enjoy your life. It's just a banner. It looks like that.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, so they were trying to put together monies. It was slow, but now it seems to have picked up. They want to run this campaign for a little while. It's meant to be...
thought-provoking?
I don't know if it's meant to be thought-provoking. I think originally it was meant to kind of counter all of these religious banners that were appearing on buses in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess somebody got pissed and they're like, why don't we put an atheist equivalent?
Mm-hmm.
Personally, my thoughts on it, waste of time.
Waste of time, waste of money. I mean, it barely says anything.
Yeah, it says probably. I mean, they didn't even have the guts to say almost definitely. This one sounds a little bit too agnostic, I'll be honest with you.
You could have that as some kind of slogan for, I don't know, it doesn't have teeth, it doesn't really do anything. I guess, you know, to a certain degree, it's slightly thought-provoking. I mean, you got to understand that you know, a lot of the people wandering around and in the rat race and stuff like that probably are a lot easier to shock than we are. So you can't really look at it from our point of view and just say, yeah, that's stupid. I mean, you got to consider the masses.
Well, I think that it would actually be better if it was in the U.S. that this happened. And mm-hmm. the reason is because it's not even the slogan or anything. It's because so many people would be up in arms. How dare they? They're mm-hmm. making fun of my faith. And then you'd have to kind of put together that issue saying, well, if you can go around telling everybody that there is God, then why isn't somebody allowed to put a banner saying that there isn't one?
Mm-hmm.
Which is not something that a lot of people would consider, but it does have shock value. If it was in the States, mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure if it has any shock value in Britain. That's the whole point. That's why I think it's useless over there. I don't think it creates a dialogue. I think people will see it and be like, "Ha, that's amusing, mm-hmm. ha ha ha," and that's it.
Well, you got to wonder. I mean, if they're doing this because they're upset with the way that religious organizations are starting to advertise out in the real world, then maybe they're starting to get a little bit concerned about the fact that maybe the religious tide is turning over there as well. You know, I mean, nothing galvanizes people more than fear of other religions. You know, people who don't identify themselves as Protestant or Catholic might feel themselves to be more so once they equate themselves to Muslims or whatever the hell people from Pakistan are.
they're Muslim.
I was having a brain fart. I didn't want to say something wrong, so I just thought I'd say something stupid and just get it out of the way.
Being stupid is better than being wrong. I admit this.
Admitting my dumbity. My dumbity.
He keeps burying the hole, and I can't stop him, folks.
Dig it, dig it, dig it.
Come on, dig, bitch.
I'm gonna hit China, where they practice
atheism and. In primitive Shinto religions, nature-based religions.
Well, don't they have a whole bunch of stupid-ass number crap?
Yeah, they actually have. They believe that they believe the number 8 is awesome.
Why?
Because of it makes. I think the word for it means something like luck. It's close to the word luck or something similar to that.
But that's stupid.
Yeah, it is kind of stupid.
I just don't understand why.
It's the equivalent of numerology. Basically.
Quay doesn't believe in our friend Quay. He doesn't believe in. Is he like 8 is lucky? Does he say that?
No, but it's kind of the same thing where, you know, we don't have a. You know, we always make fun of Friday the 13th.
Okay, 13th floor or like
69. Hey, 69, buddy.
Okay.
Kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, over in China, they're more like ancestral worship kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really necessarily religion.
No. There we go. I managed to dig myself out of the hole and we had an interesting discussion.
And you got to China.
Yeah, I did.
That's great.
I did.
The only other thing that I want to actually talk about the banner is, you
actually,
know what?
I mean, are we going to do another show before the election?
When's the election?
I think it's November 4th.
Yeah, I assume so.
Probably not, because that's next week. It's like...
Next week when?
It's like Tuesday.
Tuesday. Ew.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a weekend one for an extravaganza, since we're a little bit behind on one.
Yeah, okay. Since you...
Yeah, let's do an election extravaganza. We'll put together things about candidates that we thought are funny. And you know what? Like our little bit of politics, well, it's still interesting. And then after that, we can just forget about it when Obama wins. You better, or else, God damn it, I'm just going to give up on all you Americans. I swear to God.
I was talking to somebody, and I realized that if Obama loses, I will literally cry. I will put my head in my hands, and I will weep. I really will. It will crush whatever constitutes my soul. My soul will be crushed.
So you understand that, everybody out there? If you want to make sure that Ryan doesn't have a crushed soul...
I can't do anything. I'm up
then
here
you'll
in Canada.
Tune in for hopefully, I guess we'll try to get it out by Sunday.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
You know Jake's track record on promises.
Yeah, promises. Anyways, the last thing I wanted to say before we just go is it's actually a matter of money. Because the campaign...
What's the matter? Are we going back to the bus
thing?
I'm
going back to the bus thing.
Okay.
Because I think the campaign's probably going to cost, I think, around $100,000. And I have to admit, there's probably better shit you can do with $100,000. I don't think that people are convinced by a banner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're so awash with advertising, we just don't care anymore. I mean, yeah. I'd probably overlook it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, basically, and we've learned this because we run another website where we do advertising. We've realized that people just tune out advertisements because you got to. Otherwise, you'll go bonkers. But you know, $100,000. If these people wanted to do something good, invest in a guerrilla marketing campaign that could really put the nails down. You know, and really twist the nails in it and do something interesting and controversial that would spark debate. And $100,000, you could do some pretty crazy stuff.
You could do some pretty cool stuff, I admit. All right, everybody, that is it for our show. And join us again. Like I said, we're going to try to do this before the election because we want to talk about it and at least do our little part to excite you motherfuckers into going to the booths or something.
And we just like to say, what was it, thanks to Penguin or is it to someone else?
Yeah, thanks for Penguin Publishing who sent us the book in order for us to review it, which
little
was
book
cool.
The
Little Book of Atheist Spirituality.
I'm going to read the guy's name because it is by André Comte Sponville. Which is exactly how it's pronounced, not how Jake pronounced it.
That's
but,
how he pronounces it, Sponville.
Yeah, so far what I've read was pretty cool. Jake, even though he's, you know, he doesn't like that spirituality thing, whatever, but we appreciate them sending us the book and anybody else.
And we feel like a superstar.
Yes,
we
I know.
We feel like such a superstar.
It was our first comp, so anybody else wants to comp us stuff, we'll watch it and talk about it and maybe you'll like what we say, maybe you won't. But.